American demographics are swiftly changing, with Latinos making up the largest minority block in many states, but you would hardly know this by watching most television programming or Hollywood movies. The recent book, Almost White: Forced Confessions of a Latino in Hollywood, explores issues of diversity and solutions for expanding Latino representation on both sides of the camera. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Almost White is writer, director, producer, actor, and activist Rick Nejeda's collection of lessons and insights he's gained over a more than 30-year career working on stage, television, and the big screen. I'm pleased to welcome Rick Nejeda to the program today. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
You are joining us by phone from California. I should mention that while you've been living and working in California most of your life, you actually have family roots going all the way back to Chihuahua, Mexico, and Alamogordo, New Mexico.
Yes, my grandfather and grandmother came from Chihuahua, a little town named San Andreas. I actually went back there recently and visited, so I saw where they all came from. It's funny because a lot of people kind of look like us. So there was a plaque that said, you know, for those that stayed and fought during the revolution, and I wanted an addendum, and the Nejeda family who actually left. So we got out.
So Pancho Villa, like a lot of people, was the cause of your early movement, your family to America?
Yeah, he was, the story goes, he was counting all the cows in our ranch when his soldiers came in to count the cows. So it was kind of like an IRS audit. So we left. My great-great-grandfather grabbed all the cattle and moved it up to Alamogordo, New Mexico, where we lived. And then from there, you know, the White Sands Missile Range, part of that was our land. So the government came in, they said, I think it was during the 40s or something around then, said, you can't ranch your land anymore. We're going to use it only so many days a week. So you can't really ranch that way. So the family just left, at least my grandfather left to California. And that's how we ended up here.
I'm really taken with the notion in your book that the hyphenated term Mexican-American, that hyphen is a type of border, that you're often forced to choose which side of that border you're on.
Yeah, you know, it forces you to in a lot of ways. I mean, I understand duality better than most people. You know, I'm so many things. I'm a writer, director, I'm all these things. So it's duality, but I'm still one person. You can be from Texas and still be an American. That's duality. You can be a Texan-American. And it's harder for the American psyche because they always tend to put the Latino as foreign. Whereas, you know, where you're in El Paso and everywhere else, you realize they're far from foreign. This is, you know, this is where we're from. So a lot of it has been the media painting us as the foreigner, the media that paints us as we don't even speak English, you know. And part of it is you know, the Spanish language broadcasters have told advertisers the only way to reach Latinos is in Spanish. And that's not true. Most Latinos are actually born here in America. And I think there's something like we have an extremely high rate of English in our culture. So it's not, when German immigrants came or Irish immigrants came, people assumed they would speak English. And the same thing has happened with Latinos. We're normally born in this country, not by immigration. It's actually by birth. So we all, on the whole, speak English.
You have quite the resume. You started on stage, and you've produced and written and starred in a number of stage performances like Latinologues, and I know you're doing a one-man show of your book, Almost White, now. You've been on Broadway with The Pain of the Macho. You've written and directed the CBS Diversity Showcase for a number of years, which has helped launch the careers of many people of color. You've been on television, films, written for Mad TV and Living Color. People can check your credits online. They go on and on and on. But I'm wondering, over the you have a perspective that spans several decades in and around Hollywood. And is there a way to quantify the issue, or any studies of just the number or percentages of Latinos involved in and around the show business world that helps to illustrate maybe the underrepresentation of Latinos given their current status in America?
Oh, yeah. There's just a report that came out from the Writers Guild of America, which I'm a member, that basically said that minority writers, men and women, have lost their numbers in actual feature films and are being paid less. We've actually gone down. We haven't increased.
Not up.
Not up, no. In fact, there was a report, I think it was in 2011, that said, you know, it's amazing I know this stuff. It's sad I know this stuff.
See, and you've lived it.
Yeah, lived it. Someone sent me the article. Someone said, oh, my God, you realize that Latino people of color and women aren't represented in Hollywood very well. I wrote back, are you kidding me? I live it every day. That's like turning to someone during the Vietnam War and going, someone in South Vietnam, do you realize there's a war going on? Oh, my God. Hmm. So it's funny because, you know, yeah, of course I realize it. One time on an airplane, there was maybe 3 screenwriters that were Latino on that plane. And virtually, if that plane would have crashed, we would have lost half the screenwriters in Hollywood. It's amazing how small our numbers are. And if any other industry this was happening, people would be in uproar because it affects everyone. What happens is if I show the typical Latino written by, you know, predominantly, according to WGA, white male young writers, those images are being blasted in people's ears, eyes, and senses for 8 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's happening is, as people are in the media and they're being informed by the media, those are the images they see. In fact, I think it was a group called Hill and Knowlton, I think it was. They did a research, and they found out that a huge percentage of Americans believed that Latinos were involved in the drug trade. And, you know, and I'm at many Latino events, I'm looking out thinking, you mean actually they believe that almost 40% of Latinos are involved in the drug trade?
Hmm.
That's a huge percentage. And it's, of course, false. But if that's what America's thinking, when it turns to politics and it turns to issues like immigration and everything else, they're thinking not the Latino that I know, the Latino you never see, which is,
right,
you know, hardworking members and my families, but they're thinking of an episode of The Bridge. They're thinking of films like Traffic.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're thinking of what Latino is. And that's the problem. You know, that really becomes a problem.
When we talk about Hollywood, though, you know, where a lot of this content is, if not specifically produced, but originated, you know, Hollywood is both a physical place, which has a sizable Latino population in and around it, maybe not in the town of Hollywood, but in Los Angeles. But more importantly, Hollywood is sort of this conceptual place that just produces this worldview that it sends out to the world. And I think what you're getting at is that the Hollywood, which is the small collective of people who make the decisions about what everything we see and consume in media is going to look and smell and be shaped like, that there's something wrong right there at the initial conception stage.
Oh, yeah. Well, what it happens is, you know, it's the writer's room. The writer's room is everything. It's not so much, you know, I've heard people complain about Sofia Vergara and go, oh, she's playing this, you know, stereotypical Latina character. But the truth is, I know Sofia. She's a great, great woman. And she's playing a character that a writer wrote for her. And that writer predominantly will be white.
Mm-hmm.
So her job is not to change the writing. Her, you know, and of course she does in her producing. She can do more there. But her real job is to perform the words. That's what an actor does. And when a writer is not a writer of color or not a woman or not socially conscious in any way, they're a dangerous group of people. You know, because what they're doing is they're, you know, basically doing cultural propaganda, and it's not skewed toward Latinos. I mean, you think about it, Latinos are the highest Medal of Honor winners per capita of culture. And yet, if you look at the movie Platoon, there's only one Latino in the entire movie,
mm-hmm.
you know, that is recognized as Latino. I mean, there's a quick scene where they pan the camera and this guy in front of the Virgin of Guadalupe, you know, a little altar he put up there. And, you know, my father was in Vietnam. You know, I've experienced many cousins and people who were in Vietnam. Where are those Latinos we didn't see in that picture? And that becomes a problem. Imagine if you had you were adopted by family and there was a family album laid out on the table. And every event you had been at and your picture was taken along with the family. And you notice the album, you open it up, and your picture's been purposely cut out of the album. How would that make you feel? And that's really what Latinos are doing in America. That's how we're feeling.
Well, reading your memoir of your early years, you know, growing up in a Mexican-American family, you were raised on the same pop culture that, frankly, I was. The shows you're referencing, the sorts of things you were doing, resonated with me and my youth. But I gather at a very early age, there came moments where you realized that people looked at you differently and treated you differently?
Yeah, I mean, you realize it pretty quickly. I mean, in the book, I talk about how I was called a wetback, and this, you know, kid called me wetback, and I said, I never heard, didn't sound like a bad word, dryback, quarterback, halfback, wetback. I mean, it didn't sound like bad, but to play it safe, I just basically beat him up. And so the schoolyard supervisor runs on up, oh my God, why'd you hit Bradley? He's crying. And I go, because he called me a wetback. And she looks at me. This is all true. She looks at me and she goes, are you Mexican? Because I didn't necessarily look Mexican. And I said, yes. She goes, well, then you are a wetback. True story. And I wasn't angry because I thought, oh, I'm sorry. I actually apologized to the kid. I'm sorry. I didn't know I was a wetback because, you know, her personal authority told me I'm a wetback. So, guy, was I wrong? And that is the problem. It's prejudice is insidious. You know, it's the death by a thousand cuts. It's cumulative. You know, it wears on a person. It's what happens to a culture and a race. You know, when you look at all the things that are going on, and it eventually affects everybody. I mean, we look at the world we live in now. You're seeing the 1% getting further and further away from the 99%, and we're living in a world where resources are becoming more and more scarce, and we're seeing a world that's actually going to turn into almost little tiny city fortresses where the rich are there and the poor are way out there. Well, eventually it leads to a revolution, and eventually it leads to the breakdown of all of society. You can't be a prepper, what they have those shows on, or these, you know, they're waiting for the big doomsday of the world. Because, yeah, you may be doing that, but you're going to be living way in the middle of the wilderness, living off substance farming. You know, it is the breakdown of society. It's a breakdown of cultures. That's what, you know, ignorance and prejudice really creates. It becomes further and further a problem. And no one looks at that and says, you know, one of our problems is how we view each other. And when you do that, and the way people are viewing each other is by what they see in the media. You know, someone told me the other day, they go, well, you know, I went to Harvard recently. I spoke at the 17th annual Latino Harvard Business and Policy Conference. And someone said, well, you're in entertainment, you're not really political, and you're not really, you know, business. And I thought, well, actually, you know, entertainment is one of the bigger industries in the country, and we the one industry that always exports to the rest of the world. And on top of it, it is political. Because how you see a Latino or how you see an African-American changed everything. The NAACP put in the 70s a chapter in Hollywood merely to change the view of African-Americans. And I guarantee you, before we had Obama as president, we had to have a black president in the media, which we did. Mm-hmm. We had the Denzel Washington. We had the other people in those positions of power and seeing them as a president. So what you see is always going to define what you do.
This is an extraordinary conversation, a very important one, and if it's all right with you, I'd like to continue this conversation in the coming week and do a second show on this topic.
Sure, no problem at all.
I've been discussing diversity issues in Hollywood and the lack of opportunities for Latinos in our moving image culture with actor, director, producer, and writer Rick Najeda. Najeda's 2013 book, Almost White, Forced Confessions of a Latino in Hollywood, is an alternatingly funny and sober reflection on the causes and solutions to diversity issues in Hollywood, and you can learn more about Rick Najeda and Almost White at ricknajeda.com. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.